know you can't meditate. If you afraid, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now let me see you get loose. It's going down for it.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Nathan Zagura joined by Andrew Gribble in for Matt Wilhelm here today on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We are going to hear the Joe Thomas interview with Tony Grossi later on in today's show. We are going to talk draft with Dane Brugler in just a moment. But before we do that, Gribbs, let me say welcome you in and ask you, did you watch Duke, Wisconsin last night?
You know, I told myself I wasn't going to watch it because I was standing to make quite a profit if Wisconsin did in some office pools and things like that. So, but I inevitably got sucked in during the second half.
So if Wisconsin won, you would have won.
Yeah.
So do you hedge this? Do you hedge this?
I didn't.
Gambling,
you know, I still came out positive, you know, and some, you know, it was more of the, it was my friend's longtime pool, been doing it for like 15 years and stuff like that. But,
okay.
You know, it was good. You know, it was a great game. I mean, I can appreciate that. Duke earned every bit of that win last night. I just think Wisconsin ran out of gas.
I thought there was going to be a natural letdown. The kid called this game immediately after Wisconsin beat Kentucky. Said they're just going to have a little bit of a letdown. They're not going to have enough at the end. And that's what turned out to happen. And I'll tell you what, it was a bad time for Sam Decker to be off. It was a bad time for, you know, that team to not have that the range from three that they had earlier in the tournament. They had it early in the game, but as the game wore on, they struggled there. Decker 0 for 6 from 3 himself. And those Blue Devils, those freshmen, Grayson Allen, who had scored, I think they said 18 points in six games prior to that combined,
yeah,
with 16. And then Tyus Jones was nails.
And Decker wasn't just off. I mean, his shots just looked
off.
They were very off. I mean, there was a couple air balls. I mean, even the ones that were hitting the rim looked bad. I mean,
side of the rim.
But that guy's ability to make anything when he's close to the basket is unbelievable. I had such an appreciation for Decker over these last couple games. I mean, he must be like a wizard at horse.
He's probably pretty good at horse, and he's a scorer, because scorers, when their shot's off, they find ways to get the ball in their hand close to the basket so they can get some of those easy putbacks, which is what he did to get his points. But tip of the cap to Duke. I mean, you think about Okafor, it wasn't really a factor, although he came back and had those big 5 points at the end, the three-point play and then the putback. But Tyus Jones, that guy was money. 37 minutes, played basically the whole game, and was huge down the stretch. I liked watching that Duke team. They were fun to watch. Young, exuberant, a lot of energy, and then they got it done.
It didn't look like a normal Duke team.
No.
It just looked like watching them, they had a lot of energy. I mean, like, that Tyus guy, I mean, they're saying he could go pro, but if you look at what he could maybe do, I mean, that guy could be an all-time great college player with that shot-making ability he has there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but
there aren't any all-time great college players anymore.
I know. It's just that's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. But you're right. It did not look like a Duke team. But Coach K, obviously, it wasn't – to me, he seemed like a more emotional guy and kind of more human than he's ever really seemed to me.
But it was just – it was interesting, and I don't know how much of an effect this had on the game, but the difference in fouls in the first half and second half, he was clearly just – he was out of his mind mad in the first half when Wisconsin only had a couple fouls.
Oh, and yeah.
I don't know if Duke just changed their approach on how to draw fouls. I don't know if there was – you know, when you maybe point something out to the officials and they start to notice things a little bit more in the second half. I mean, it was – They were a more aggressive team in the second half, getting to the hoop. And Wisconsin's not a team that needs to be playing from behind. I mean, even when they were trying to hurry it up,
they're
still trying to run sets, and it just looked like a mess there at the end.
I didn't like Bo Ryan whining after the game.
No, I mean I
thought it was weak. I thought it was weak. There's more body contact in this game than any game we played all year, and I just feel sorry for my guys that all of a sudden a game was like that. It's the same for everybody. It's not like Duke wasn't in foul trouble. Duke was. Now, in the second half, obviously Duke was in that double bonus pretty early. But, I mean, that's how basketball should be. It should be tough, grinded out, good defense, hard fought.
I mean,
I liked it.
Officiating is so not great in the college game that it ultimately evens out. I mean, you look at the Wisconsin-Kentucky game. Wisconsin had a few really bad calls go against them
early
in the second half, and then they benefit from the shot clock thing at the end there. So, I mean, it tends to even out, but it just – I can see from Bo Ryan's perspective, he thought they were on the end of it evening out at the end, and it ultimately hurt them. I just think, you know, Kaminsky at the end, just that last – 4 minutes, Kaminsky looked like he was just completely out of gas.
He was most definitely out of gas. Wisconsin was as well. One guy who is never out of gas, he just published his unbelievable draft guide, the draft Bible. In terms of all the draft things that are out there, the one that I read every single year belongs to this man, Dane Brugler from CBSSports.com, joining us right now on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. Dane, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon, guys.
Dane, give people an idea of how much goes into your draft guide, and let's just start off right now telling them where they can get it. It is every prospect, everything you need to know about them, strengths, weaknesses, grade, what round he thinks they should go in. It is the most comprehensive draft guide, I believe, that is out there, and it's the one that I read so that I can get fully educated, and I've been waiting and waiting, and it just came out at the end of last week. I'll tweet out the link again, but you got to follow them at DP Brugler and tell them where they can get your guide and just kind of give us a little background on everything that goes into it.
Yeah, if you follow me on Twitter at DP Brugler, I have the link out there. You know, scouting is all about details. No detail too small when it comes to evaluation and trying to figure out who a player is both on the field and off the field. And so that's what I really pride my guide on, is being as detailed as possible. Not only what I see on tape, but also, off the field, getting different opinions from coaches, the combine numbers, the pro days. I mean, there's even a pronunciation guide in there, so you know how to say all the names correctly. It's really a labor of love, and something that, I've spent the last, 10 months on, putting everything in this guide. So 187 pages, I promise you. If you pick it up, you won't be disappointed. And we talk about the first-round guide, second-round guide, but what I love about this guide is it really covers everyone. And so even in the sixth, seventh, and even the priority free agents, hopefully this guide gives you an idea of who that player is.
And how much do you charge people for this?
I was told I needed to charge $20, but I want to keep it affordable for everyone, and so I talked them down to $6.99. Just keep it on.
It is worth way more.
Right. And that's what, my boss is trying to talk me into selling it for more. But, I don't want to do all this work and then, have only so many people can get it. I know $20 is a lot, so I want to keep it $7, make it affordable for everyone and really try and, spread the wealth of knowledge for this draft class. Cause that's what makes it fun. The interaction with fans about these guys, with these prospects. Who would fit, who doesn't fit, who's going to be a good player, that type of thing. So I love the interaction. So, if you go to my Twitter at DP Brugler, all the information's there.
Dane, pardon me, I don't have the pronunciation guide in front of me, so forgive me if I pronounce this guy's name wrong. Cedric Agbuhi, he's been kind of a name that was buzzing on Twitter today, people saying now he might slide into the first round. Can you kind of talk about him, the Texas A&M offensive lineman, and why he might be kind of rising on people's boards right now?
Right, and he was A&M's left tackle this past year. He took over for Jake Matthews, going from the right side to the left side. The biggest thing with him is coming off the injury. He tore his ACL in the bowl game. Otherwise, he would be in that first-round discussion. And, what I'm hearing from scouts is just the worry about long-term durability. He's been banged up over his career with different injuries. He had an ankle 2 years ago that caused him to miss 3 games, the torn ACL. With the boy, you have from the lower body, it's exactly what you want, a tackle position, the feet, the lower body fluidity. It's all there for him. Really where he needs to grow is the upper body. He needs to improve his technique with his hands and do a better job in that respect. So with the boy, I certainly understand why the first round talk is there, because he's that type of player. It just comes down to the durability and how comfortable you feel with when he's going to be back on the field. Is he going to have to start the season on the PUP list? Is he going to be at 100% as a rookie? All these questions go into his evaluation. And a big reason why I gave him more of a third-round grade, but it wouldn't shock me at all if a team sees him highly enough to take him in either the late first or the early second round.
All right, Dane, you did the Browns draft. You redid your mock draft yesterday, posted it at CBSSports.com where you can get it. You have the Browns going at number 12, Danny Shelton. You still have all three of the top wide receivers off the board prior to the Browns pick, with Cooper going 4, White going 7, Devontae going 11, Shelton going 12. Then you have the Browns come back with Lyle Collins at number 19. Let's start with the pick at 12. I think the Browns' two biggest needs right now are an interior D lineman, which Shelton fits, and then also an edge rusher. In your draft, you have Randy Gregory fall. Is Shelton versus Gregory a tough choice to make for you, and why did you ultimately go Shelton for the Browns?
Well, yeah, with Gregory, obviously, you have some off-field red flags. And with everything going on with Josh Gordon, I just can't see how the Browns would feel comfortable with what Randy Gregory brings. And it's more than just one failed combine drug test. I mean, he failed 2 drug tests last year in Nebraska, and it got to the point where the coaching staff was like, hey, stop testing this guy. He's going to fail, and so we need him on the field. And they stopped drug testing him. And so there is a pattern there, a concerning habit that, you really have to take into account with this type of player. So while he is talented and Randy Gregory, someone's going to get probably a bargain in that late first or mid to late first round. If he keeps his nose clean, he'll be a good player. But to me, the Browns, I think they look more towards Shelton, who is that two-gapping prototypical nose tackle. I think at the very worst, he's a two-down player who can be a consistent plugger in the middle of that defensive line. At his best, he can be an every-down type of guy who can push the pocket on third down and, be a threat as a pass rusher as well. So with Danny Shelton, he's not that Helati Nada type of player. I don't think that's a very accurate comparison. But I do think you have a consistent guy who can play a lot of snaps, and he is a very consistent player. So I think you have a better idea. You know what you're getting with Danny Shelton.
Who does he remind you of?
It's a good question. I go back and forth on this because there's a lot of players that you could compare him to. I still haven't found that right guy because he does show a little bit of Nada that you like to compare him to. Brandon Williams with the Ravens, you see a little bit of that type of player. Josh Chapman with the Colts, you see a little bit there. So I think it's a combination of a lot of guys. But he's a very unique player because at 360 pounds, I've never scouted a player that's made more plays outside the hashes. He just moves so well, and he has the upper body power. So he has a lot to offer an NFL team.
Dane, you have Lyle Collins going to 19, and that's above – 3 other offensive linemen that have maybe been linked to the Browns and Eric Flowers, Andres Pete, and Cameron Irving of Florida State. What sets Collins apart from those 3 guys?
Yeah, this offensive tackle class is really unique because you asked 5 different teams, you might have 5 different number one offensive tackles in this group. There isn't that consensus top guy. For me, I like Andres Pete number one, but for other teams, they like Collins or they like TJ Clemmings. Some like DJ Humphreys, who has his pro day this morning. I know he's a player the Browns are interested in. He's a possibility there. Eric Flowers has his fans around the league. So it's a very unique class where, few offensive tackle rankings are going to be similar around the league. But with Collins, you have a player who, he did it in the SEC the last 3 years. He was a sophomore guard. He moved outside the left tackle as a junior, started 25 games there in the last 2 years. And with Collins, what I always say is it doesn't always look pretty, but he gets the job done. He sells out every single play, and so he overextends himself. He tends to get off balance, but he knows how to recover, and he knows how to play within himself to play to his strength. And so, I really like the focus, the awareness. He's a player that, again, it doesn't always look pretty, but the effort is always nonstop. He has the mean streak that you want to show up as both a run blocker and pass protector. I think he has enough talent to survive on the edges, probably as a right tackle, but some teams like him inside a guard. But if he goes to the Browns, I like his potential long-term at right tackle.
So I don't think the Browns need to go offensive line in the first round. That's just me. I think you could obviously keep Mitchell Schwartz around if you wanted to. You've got Michael Bowie, who started 8 games for Seattle 2 years ago. I just think they need more impact there in the first round, and that if they were going to go line, do you think a guy like Cam Irving might be a better fit because he can play anywhere and you got to have that contingency, especially in light of Joe Thomas's comments, for a guy like Alex Mack perhaps leaving after this year?
Yeah, and, you know, with Cameron Irving, that's the appeal, is the versatility. You know, he was actually a defensive tackle to begin his career. Then he moved to left tackle as a sophomore at Florida State. Started 28 games there as a sophomore and a junior. And then he went to the moved inside the center, where he's looked a lot more comfortable. And so while I think he does have that versatility to kick out the tackle if you need him, he is a much, much better center prospect because of, you know, he just has that more confidence. He seems more comfortable when he doesn't have to, when he's not responsible for all that space on the edges. And so I do think Irving is the top center in this group. You have a lot, he offers a lot, and I think he prefers center, and so I think that's where he feels more comfortable, and that's where I think he's better long-term. So Cameron Irving, I do see the versatility because he does have experience at tackle, but I don't see as much long-term versatility because I think his best position by far has been inside of center.
All right, so if I was the GM of the Browns right there, and I took Shelton at 12, at 19, if Bud Dupree was still on the board, I'm going to go Bud Dupree because I think another edge rusher is the biggest need of this team. How do you see that playing out for the Browns? And then is there a better chance of getting a guy who can contribute as an edge rusher or as a lineman in, say, the third round, assuming maybe you go wide receiver, tight end in the second round? And where's the depth in this draft? Is it more on the line or is it more kind of in the edge rusher position?
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. I put the Bud Dupree at number 19 quite a bit. I do like that fit. Putting an offensive lineman there, I think I'm just kind of connecting the dots. The Browns are doing a lot of research on these offensive tackles, so I think they might be in the market for one at 19. But if Bud Dupree is there, he would not be a bad pick at that point. A player that started his career at tight end, moved to defense, put his hand on the ground, but he also stood up as a senior and played more of a linebacker position. I love the way he launches himself off the line of scrimmage. I think you have just a terrific natural athlete. I mean, he showed that at the combine, 42-inch vertical, 11-6 broad jump, 4.56 40-yard dash. Just an outstanding athlete, former basketball player, and that really shows on the field. He plays with violence. I love his range. He can make plays not only in the backfield, but he can drop and play the run and pick up some passing responsibilities, even cover the slot this past season at Kentucky. So I think you have a versatile player with Dupree, and I'd be all in favor for him at the Browns at number 19. But the pass rusher is a deeper group this year. I think we're going to see four or five, maybe even more pass rushers come off the board in the first round. And then in the third round, you have a player that I think the Browns have some interest in, Nate Orchard out of Utah.
Yep.
At Utah, this past year, Utah had a banner season, set the school record for sacks.
Yeah, 18 and a half.
So I think of a player that he does have some questions. He does have his flaws. That's why he's going to be a second-day pick, not a first-day pick. He's a former wide receiver who has really developed nicely, and he just knows how to get to the pocket. He's not the most powerful guy. He's not going to just maul blockers out of his way, but he has quickness. He can bend the edge. I think he ideally fits as that wide nine defensive end or standing up as an outside linebacker on a 3-4.
Yeah, a player that's been linked to the Browns a lot in other mock drafts is the Arizona State wide receiver Jalen Strong. I see you don't even have him going in the first round. Is there a chance you think he could be around for the Browns in round two? Or if not, who are maybe some second-round wide receivers that could fall kind of perfectly at that spot?
I think Jalen Strong is a solid second-round guy. I do understand the first-round talk. He's a well-built kid at 6'2.5", ran into 4.4s at the combine. His dad was a big-time basketball player. So, I mean, you see that on the field. But he's not a player that's going to consistently separate. He's more of a possession target, someone that can post up. And that's a valuable piece to an offense and what he can do in the red zone. With his ball skills is really attractive for a player. And he's just 21 years old. I mean, he's really growing into the player he's going to be. So I think he passes the eye test, and there's a lot to be excited about. But I see more of a number two, maybe even a guy that will thrive when he's put in the slot. So I see more of a second-round option. And if you don't get that receiver in the first round, there are some legitimate options in the second round. I mentioned Jalen Strong, if he's able to last into the Browns pick. Nelson Aguilar from USC, very talented wide receiver, compares favorably to Marquise Lee, USC's receiver from last year. He ended up going to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yep.
As a future for himself in the league. Rashad Greene out of Florida State, another one, Devin Smith, and then Philip Dorsett, Miami of Florida, probably the fastest player in this draft. He's going to be in that second, third round range. Rashad Perryman is really the wild card wide receiver to watch in the top 50 picks this year. He has the natural talent to go somewhere in the top 25, but he's just so raw. Where will he end up going? I think, he could be in that conversation at 19 if the Browns really want to go receiver there. At 6'2", 215, running in the 4.2s, you have to be encouraged by the physical skill set. But, again, he's just very raw. He drops way too many passes than you'd like to see. The route tree isn't there yet. But, again, long-term, you have to be excited about Rashad Perryman. I think he could go as early as the teens. I'm not sure he gets past Baltimore at 26.
If Randy Gregory falls all the way to 19 and say you take a Shelton at 12, is that an automatic run to the podium for you for the Browns?
You know, I don't know. I really think when you – it comes down to their comfort level with, who he is. Because, again, he's not a flawless player off or on the field either. He, when he measured in at the combine at 235 pounds, that was a little bit of a red flag.
Kind of Mingo-esque.
Exactly. 6'5 frame and have that lean muscle. In a way, when you look at these players, scouts always, you look at the wrists. You look at, the ankles, if they're very thin, thinly built there, that kind of tips you off that they might not be able to add as much muscle as you might want for a player that's usually that 6'5 and has that type of build. So for Randy Gregory, it's not like he's the no-brainer top five player, but he is special athletically. What he does off the edge, he has to be in the conversation. But again, with the off-field concerns, is the marijuana issue going to be a reoccurring problem? Is it something that you're going to have to deal with? And everything that's going on with Josh Gordon, that's not what they want to have to put up with. So I don't think Randy Gregory's that automatic run to the podium type of player. I do think he's worth having the conversation about. He's worth, doing the due diligence and, talking about it. And if he ends up being the pick, then, we'll see what happens. But I don't think he's that automatic safe bet if he does last at number 19.
Let me ask you this. Devin Funchess, a guy in my draft, in my ideal draft for the Browns, I'm going, if I can get a Shelton, then I come back, I get an edge rusher. And then in that second round, I like Funchess, and I like him to come in and play the Jordan Cameron role of kind of that move tight end for this team. Is that where you see him? Do you see him more as a wide receiver? Or would you rather see, if you're going to go kind of for that kind of conversion guy, maybe waiting for a Darren Waller out of Georgia Tech to become that kind of pass-catching project tight end for you?
With Funchess, I see a player that's more similar to Kelvin Benjamin or an Alshon Jeffrey rather than a tight end.
Okay.
Now, you talk to scouts, and they're split on this. Some think he can be more of an inline guy, but he's just not going to offer you much of a blocker. And I know that's not why you're drafting him. You're drafting him to be a mismatch nightmare going up against linebackers and safeties. And I think he can do that. But with Funchess, the biggest thing with him is the routes, the hands, they need to be developed. He needs to be more consistent. You look at him as a senior, he just didn't have – I know he dealt with quarterback issues with Devin Gardner and that Michigan offense. It wasn't the high-power offense that would let him succeed. But the production wasn't what you want to see for a player of that size, 6'4", 230 pounds. You want to see more of an impact. And so – he doesn't play up to his measurables all the time. And so I think on paper, you see a very attractive player, a very attractive prospect. I just want to say I expect more out of him. And maybe in the NFL with some pro coaching, they'll be able to get that out of him. I see more of a third round type of player who, I think I can get more out of him, hopefully. And I think I can win with him on the outside. I do think he can move inside the more of that hybrid version, like you mentioned with Jordan Cameron. He can line up in the slot. Occasionally, you can put him on maybe in line with his hand on the ground. But I think he does his best work on the outside, and especially in the red zone, we can utilize his size and mismatch potential.
Dane, who are a few players maybe in that last day where if they're still on the board, if you're the GM, you're running to go grab them? If the guys, sleepers, you could see in the last day making a big impact.
Well, yeah, there's always a few every year. And I think one guy that the Browns have been connected to who is kind of a sleeper in this group is Ricky Collins out of Texas A&M Commerce. This is a player that had some struggles to qualify academically out of high school. He bounced around from junior college to Midwestern State. He really only had 1 year of production this past year in 2014 as a senior. But, wow, the tape was impressive. 71 catches, almost 1,200 yards, and he got 14 touchdowns. 6 foot, 200 pounds. He's a good size receiver. Big hands, a huge wingspan for a receiver his size. I see a player that dominated the Division II level, and I think he can come in and make an impact in the NFL. Maybe not right away, but a guy that I'd love to bring in the later rounds, as long as you know, the character and the interviews check out okay. I'd love to bring him in, a balanced athlete. Love the body control, the ball skills. The competitiveness, not only after the catch, but before the catch. He knows how to get open. I think he can develop into a quality contributor if given the chance. And so I think Ricky Collins, wide receiver, a name to keep an eye on.
Ricky Collins, I like that one, a deep name to keep an eye on there at the wide receiver position. The Browns have done well at the lower level. Isaiah Crowell, Terrence West, and, of course, Pierre Desir from last year, Taylor Gabriel as well. So they've done a good job kind of at some of those smaller schools, especially finding Desir down at Lindenwood. So one of the guys, you talked Danny Shelton earlier as looking at a defensive lineman for this team. What's the difference in what Danny Shelton would bring to the Browns or what Malcolm Brown would bring to the Browns, a name that we've heard a lot about as a guy linked to them, perhaps at number 19? Kind of those interior defensive linemen that we're hearing kind of their names come and be associated with the Browns, of those guys, what's kind of the difference between a Shelton? What's the difference between a Malcolm Brown and Eddie Goldman? And who, you know, who fits in the best with what the Browns seem to need, which would be a nose tackle?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of different flavors when you look at the defensive tackle class early in the early stages of this draft. Malcolm Brown, Danny Shelton, Eddie Goldman, Jordan Phillips, Oklahoma, even Carl Davis out of Iowa could possibly fill that role. With Malcolm Brown, I see a lot more versatility, where Danny Shelton, he's that prototypical, you know, two-gapping nose tackle. Malcolm Brown, I see a guy that can line up anywhere from the zero technique to the five technique. So he brings a little more versatility to, not only can he play the nose, but I think he can play the five technique. He can play outside. He can play the three technique if you need him to. I mean, he can really wear any hat you want on that defensive line. And so I think that's the appeal with Malcolm Brown, why so many teams are high on him in the top 20 pick. Eddie Goldman, to me, he reminds me of a Corey Legit type of player. Mm-hmm. He's well built, 6'4", 335. He moves really well. He can be that two-gapping nose tackle as well, but he can also play on the outside. He brings some versatility. With Danny Shelton, you saw more impact potential on tape. You see a guy that not only plug gaps, but he's also pushing the pocket to be an impact player in the backfield. The production was there. With Eddie Goldman, he had 8 tackles for loss this year. While stats aren't everything, Danny Shelton had more than double that. And again, production can be deceiving. You have to look at the tape and see how that how those stats were manufactured. But with Danny Shelton, I think you have a little more impact potential. Eddie Goldman, he's still not the player that he's going to be. He's still developing, still growing. But you have a player that shows a lot of positive traits that you look for. And so I think Eddie Goldman, more towards the later stages of the first round. But if they don't get Danny Shelton at 12, Eddie Goldman might not be a bad consolation prize at 19.
I know you have those top three receivers all coming off the board before the Browns pick. But say one of them is around at 12, do you still go with Shelton if you're the Browns? Or do you make that pick for either Cooper, White, or Parker?
Me personally, I'm going with the wide receiver there, just because I think all three on my big board are in my top 10. Amari Cooper, Kevin White, Devontae Parker, all three are top 10 picks in this draft to me. All three have number one potential. And with the Browns, Dwayne Bowe, can he be a number one and regain his form that he showed earlier in his career? Maybe, we don't know. We'll have to see how that plays out. But regardless, I'm still taking a wide receiver there if one of those three receivers drops to me at 12. But for the Browns, I'm not convinced that they are along the same lines of thinking. They might want to go for the nose tackle position. Just because when you look at wide receiver, you can find a receiver in the second or third round where nose tackle, Danny Shelton's the best that this draft class has to offer, and there's no guarantee that there will be a nose tackle available for you in the second or third round, or at least one that you see as a starting quality nose tackle. So I think the Browns might lean Danny Shelton there. but I would have a tough time passing on one of those three receivers and the number one potential that they bring to my team.
Talking with Dane Brugler from CBS Sports. Dane, you've been so generous with your time. We're going to let you get out of here. Time flies when you're having fun. Follow him on Twitter at DP Brugler. And then, of course, on my Twitter at Nathan Zagura. I just tweeted out the link to his draft guide. Check that out. Final one from me. I've talked to a couple O-line coaches, and they say this draft for interior offensive linemen is actually fairly deep. Do you think the Browns could find, you know, a center to back up Alex Mack and perhaps transition if need be here in the third, fourth round of this draft?
I think so, I would agree. This the interior line does have some good depth pieces, and not only in the second round, but the third, the fourth, the fifth. Allie Marfitt out of Hobart is a player I really like. I think he's in that late second, early third round range. You know, he really went to the Senior Bowl, and he showed he belonged. He's a player to keep an eye on. And then even in the later stages on day three, Antoine Everett out of McNeese State is a player, was a combine snub, but a player that he's in that conversation to be the highest drafted non-combine invite. Played left tackle, but I think he's going to make the move inside at the next level, which will serve him really well. And then at center, B.J. Finney out of Kansas State was a yep. four-year starter. He's in that fourth-round range. Shaq Mason, Georgia Tech, same type of thing. So I'd absolutely agree. I think the interior offensive line, Cameron Irving is a very talented center. He might turn out to be the best offensive lineman in this entire class. But if you don't get Cameron Irving early, there's a good chance you can find a quality center or a guard in the middle of the late rounds this year.
Dane, great stuff as always. Go ahead, get his guide. Check it out on my Twitter, at Nathan Zagura, his Twitter, at DP Brugler. Follow him. Check out his mock draft at CBSSports.com. Great stuff as always, man, and looking forward to talking to you again as we get closer to this draft here now, just 22 days away.
Sounds great. Anytime, guys.
All right. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. We'll kind of digest some of the things we heard from Dane there, get your thoughts on him as well. Still to come, we will hear Joe Thomas with Tony Grossi, that interview that's causing a lot of buzz around the media circles here in the National Football League. Nathan Zagura, Andrew Gribble, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.